Hello, and welcome to the Game Slate Podcast, episode 158. I'm Proteus.
I'm Assimilator.
I'm Zelda Queen.
And I'm Rocky's Magic Number.
And this week, some of us play some video games, which is par for the course.
Yeah, I've taken more time to play the games lately. It's been nice.
And I have, just because I've become obsessed with an old game again. It's that hilarious situation, you're just like, hee hee hee.
Feels like the first time all over again.
Yeah, except it's a lot easier.
Yeah, I have to say that too. Like, watching you replay through Super Mario RPG, it's like, I remember this being harder. But then I also feel
I also remember being like 12.
Well, no, because it has a release date of 1996.
Yeah. 12 or 13.
It makes me feel old, because in 3 more years, it's going to be 20 years old.
That's why I attempt to avoid comparing my age to the releases of technology, because then I think, I remember when they moved to 3.5-inch floppies as the primary storage medium for your data when you had to transfer it from 5.5-inch.
Do you remember zip drives? And they're like, oh man, it's like 150 things in one, and it's the buggiest piece of crap ever.
Not only do I remember them, but they were the primary mode of storage at my parents' work. Because they were big enough in order to back up our QuickTime database.
Oh boy. And yeah, CD burners were still pretty expensive at that point.
They hadn't made them yet. Yeah, I mean, that's why zip drives took off so fast, is because they held so much more than a regular floppy, and you didn't have CD drives yet. And when you finally did get them, they were pathetically slow, so it wasn't worth our time to do it.
You had to basically not run anything else on your computer when you were burning a CD back in the day.
Or press the turbo button. Remember the turbo button that everyone always had pressed all the time? It was an automatic auto-clocker.
There was no reason not to turn on the turbo button.
See, and then the saddest thing to think of is the fact that my Galaxy S3 in my pocket here has a 32 gigabyte micro SD card in there, and the fact that they have them up to, I want to say 128, has just recently come out for micro SD cards. This is a card the size of my fingernail.
Actually, I think your fingernail is bigger than at least your thumbnail is bigger than those micro SD cards.
Oh, totally is. Totally is. And I've never seen, I just remember my mom always comment on this and like, you know, how crazy computers are. And we had this, like, HP, or no, it was a Packard, was it a Packard Bell? Yeah, a Packard Bell. And it had a 600 megabyte hard drive in it. You're never going to need this more space than this. And in fairness, like, they had no idea that digital media was going to become such a thing. But yeah, and now I have that times 70 in my pocket.
Well, it's like learning that the space shuttle that took people to the moon, your original brick Game Boy has the more computing power than the computer that took man to the moon.
Oh, the Apollo missions, yeah. We talk about our TA-83s, we run the world with the same thing. And old computers.
And play Drug Wars.
Oh, Drug Wars is the best. There's nothing else worth playing. Except for blackjack until I learned how to game it.
I remember having Space Invaders on my calculator.
Oh, my. I remember someone had an 85 or an 86, and he had some, like, cool little tower RPG game in there, which is actually pretty terrible, but it was something somebody coded up in BASIC, so, you know, rock and roll. But anyways, I hear you guys play video games this week.
Yes, I actually just finished replaying the original Mass Effect and have moved into Mass Effect 2. And it's actually interesting the number of changes they actually made control-wise and just in the GUI between the two games. Like, in the original Mass Effect, you had a lot more power abilities, and you could use just about any weapon, whether you could use it efficiently or not. For example, I could, you know, pull out a sniper rifle as a sentinel when I was only trained in heavy pistols. Good luck hitting anything with it, but I did have it. Same thing with, like, well, and like, here's the example. I mean, my aiming reticle for the sniper rifle actually went off the screen. So I couldn't aim with that thing worth a shit. Only reason I was like, it's like, why, where's the aiming reticle? Then I look at the very top corner, I see the little circle just kind of cresting the edge.
Wait, this is like the basic margin of error that you have on your shot?
Yes.
So it could go hit the guy, and it could hit anywhere on your screen as well. You might as well just be using the assault rifle from Halo.
You might as well just throw your guy at him.
Superman would dodge it.
I was going to say, this sounds like me trying to play Counter-Strike. My bullet could go anywhere.
It's like, same thing, the assault rifle, as you know, about saw about 80% of the screen. The shotgun, actually, I had a better chance to hit with the assault rifle with the shotgun than I did with the assault rifle.
Those are always fun moments in Borderlands, where you're like, wow, this is a complete spray. Holy smokes. And then you actually get one of those like crazy sniper rifles. But anyway, you're talking about Mass Effect.
And then the pistol I actually could aim with. And because in the original Mass Effect there was no ammo counter, you just had to make sure your gun didn't overheat, there was no reason for me to actually switch to any other weapon, because I just had to, you know, stop shooting long enough for the heat to dissipate and then keep shooting. Sprinting and crouching were different buttons, as was the use button. When you went into Mass Effect 2, they cut down the power selection, using one power set a universal cooldown on all of them. They introduced ammo, so you had individual ammo for more things, but each class has ability to use more than just one weapon. It's like I play a Sentinel, so I have, you know, biotic and tech powers, but I only had access to a pistol in Mass Effect 1. In Mass Effect 2, I also have machine pistols. And then later on, I'll actually add the assault rifle to it once I get to a specific level. And then sprint, crouch, hide, and use were all stumped down into just the space bar. So I hold the space bar, run into cover, I immediately go into cover without having to hit two other buttons. Which is convenient.
I'm interested to see how this will translate in the PlayStation controls when I buy the trilogy.
It'll probably be one of the shift buttons, one of the R buttons.
So many buttons.
And then there's a specific button also that pulls up the power wheel to choose your powers and choose your associate's powers.
Boy, that's a lot of buttons.
It's fun.
I've never been good at quick button things. I'm always like, nope, start.
Well, what's nice,
think about this.
When you hit the button in order to bring up the power wheel, it pauses the enemies. So it allows you to, like, okay, this power is used on him, this power is used on him, and they stop moving until you actually release the button again, and then they all go into, then the game starts up again. So it makes it kind of a real-time but pausable action strategy, if it makes any sense.
No, so... We made a comparison earlier, and this is going to be a shocker to your entire crowd, although I'm the guy who's like on a video game podcast, and I don't really have that much time to play video games, and kind of just like, hey, I got a new Android game, and I'm bored with it now. Not Candy Crush. Oh, God, no.
I keep seeing that everyone. I'm like, I don't even want to know what it is.
I'm just block eternally. I don't care. No one tell me.
It's bejeweled with drugs. Like, not literally drugs, but it feels like it. But all the girls I know are all like, Candy Crush. And I'm like...
My aunt plays it. I don't.
But you know why? You know why we didn't get into, like, Farmville and Candy Crush? Because we played SimCity, and we played Tetris, and... there's any one of the various
Harvest Moon. I played Farmville just because it was like, I'm like, oh, is it kind of like Harvest Moon for my computer? And then I realized I had a friend everywhere to get all this stuff, and I accidentally deleted something at one point. I'm like, that's it, don't care anymore, got rid of everything, unsubscribed, blocked the app, blocked everybody who was all like, do stuff with me, don't care anymore.
Because like, I remember when I played this the first time and it was awesome. It was called
Harvest Moon
in your case, or like SimCity for me, or just whatever. And you're like, oh, you mean I have to like pay, or bug my friends to actually play this game? Well, that's stupid. Out the window with you. That's why whenever I look at a free app that looks even remotely interesting, I always check out the reviews to see how many people are like, oh, add me as a friend, gamer tag, blah, 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 and get 17 free things. And I'm like, nope. It's like, if you don't pay money or friend everyone ever, then you get the slow, boring rot, in which it is just... What's the word? It's like an unspoken assumption that you are going to be run over by everyone else who is paying for it. And did bug all their friends, like, aha, I have all the armor. And you're like, I have a stick. This is what the free version provides.
I mean, that's one of the reasons why I kind of like Guild Wars, at least. It doesn't have a monthly subscription, so whenever I want to go back to play, I can just play. And yes, you can pay money to get stuff, but it's basically just having more inventory space or getting, sort of different colors on your, armor, that sort of thing. It doesn't give you anything that, hey, I can buy this equipment and totally overpower anybody who's, like, dedicatedly playing it without purchasing anything.
That's a smart way to do it. Anyways, I was going to say, being the guy who doesn't... I've never actually played Mass Effect. I know, I'm sorry,
Neither have these two,
really?
Actually.
Oh, well, hey, I'm not in the minority yet.
See, this is the weird thing. My brother loves Mass Effect. He is not big into RPG sort of, like, things, and it's kind of RPG-ish.
Oh, totally
RPG-ish. From the third, person, shooter aspect. And he loves it. It's like his one of his favorite series, and he thinks it's a total crime that I've never played it. And I'm just like, I don't know what it is about it. I don't have any hatred or animosity or dislike for it. I just have no big desire to play it.
I bet I know at least part of it is like just that cold steel of space. You want more color. You're an artist. You like color and lots of color. Is that fair?
Part of it is Zelda Queen only likes JRPGs, as far as we've ever discovered.
They're very colorful, though, aren't they?
Well, generally.
She doesn't like the Elder Scrolls series either, does she?
Yeah, we've tried this.
I find it tedious. Like, I start playing it, and I'm just like, I don't know. I just find it very tedious to play, and I hate first person. I really do hate first person. It just
bothers me. You use the mouse wheel and you zoom out. It's really simple. And you're in third person.
And I started a character. I played a few hours into it, and I'm just like, I don't know. And I'm like, it's what I want from stuff. It's a free roaming, go wherever, do whatever you want sort of game, but I don't want to play it. And I don't know why.
I mean, come on. Skyrim is like Minecraft with dragons.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like, you know, I cannot stand... I tried playing Saints Row the Third. I don't like it. Everybody loves it. I can't stand it. For some reason, I own it, but it was actually, I own it because of Humble Bundle.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's probably on a Humble Bundle. No, the question I was going to ask, though, is kind of, I was about to say, oh, scroll back in your third person. Remember how Dark Forces 2 was, like, the first game to do that? It was completely awesome. And that's, I guess, that's a decent enough segue, because you compared Mass Effect to Knights of the Old Republic, which I have played. Not very much of it, but I have played it. And I realize that I'm too nice of a person to actually even be a Dark Jedi. I'm like, no, I can't be mean to this person. They didn't do anything. But, like, just be mean. I'm like, I can't. Even though I'm playing a character, I can't. I'm too nice. Yes, here, I'm not going to kill you for not giving me the thing like I should, because it would be awesome. Be honest and do the honest thing. Yay, light side points. Great, I can push something now or not choke people. Man.
But your characters also survive longer because you can heal them.
True, but... choking people.
That is one of the few games where I actually was evil in it.
Really? You were able to pull it off?
Yep.
Was it a stretch for you?
Yes.
Well, like, to be fair, though, KOTOR is not hard to be evil in. The choices are evil are either, like, kiss puppies and help old ladies across the street, or murder everyone.
True. Yeah, and the Mass Effect series, like you're saying, it did for video games what Star Wars did for movies. And I will always vote that 100%. I mean, the way that the story actually, through the series, what you do in the game does react in what happens throughout the rest of the story. For example, especially between 1 and 2, all the things you did in 1 actually does eventually come back in 2. Like, you'll run into this character if you did not kill this person, you'll run into them. If you didn't do this, this will happen here. If you did do this, this will happen in here. One of the prime examples is in the end of the first game, you have an option to save the council. If you let the council die, and you end up deciding to put then humanity actually takes over galactic government, and when you start your second game, it's humans that are running the council. If you save them, then they put a single human on the council, and the original three that were there are still in the game.
Seems like a very cohesive environment and a persisting storyline. Yeah, so I guess that works. I mean, so if I like Knights of the Old Republic, you're thinking I'm going to like Mass Effect.
I think you love Mass Effect.
I do PlayStation 3, and I'm going to need not just watch Blu-rays oncoming as the cold months come. I have too many concerts to go to in the next 2 months to really get into with, like, Mass Effect music. What do?
I've just been plugging away still at Fire Emblem. Airing off all the characters, except one character. I have one poor guy who's going to be the only character.
He's the third wheel, huh?
Well, part of the problem is one of the children. You can marry the children to the other children. But the only other...
Well, especially though, you have an odd number of children, right?
Yeah,
so there's always going to be someone left out.
Yeah. And it's going to be Owain, just because everyone's based on whoever their mom is. So his mom is Lisa. Lisa and Crom are siblings. Well, the only other female character that is available is Cynthia, who happens to be Crom's daughter. So if I married Owain and Cynthia, it's cousin. Their first cousin's getting married.
So they're from Georgia.
Hello.
So we're going to hopefully avoid that, and Cynthia is going to marry Brady, who is Maribel's son, so... But I almost have 70 hours. I'm like 6 minutes short of 70 hours into this game.
So when you turn it back on, you'll get your 70 hours.
I mean, I've just been raising character levels, getting some different classes, seeing how they work, you know, making everybody... I'm almost finished with the game. I think I'm on chapter 25. I think there's 28 chapters or something from what I've gleaned online. Maybe there's a couple other ones I don't know about. But all I know is if this current chapter, once I finish it, it will unlock all the paralogues that they had on Spot Pass so I can get, like, 6 new characters. Characters that all previously we thought were dead, we will say. Like, they should be dead. Honestly, they really should be dead.
Like Marth, or...
No, characters throughout the game that things happen to.
Oh, okay.
They really should still be dead. But I'm having fun still. I will eventually finish. It's kind of a little bit grindy because I'm trying to raise all these character levels. But it's not that bad. I mean, as long as you hit a map up that's not like the past map you finished, you can level your characters pretty decently. So, yeah, I'll eventually finish, but I'm still working at it.
As we mentioned earlier, I'm playing Super Mario RPG, which is, you know, because I've got the Super Nintendo and doing the real experience.
That's pretty good.
But it's, yeah, it's fun. I'm third through or so.
You have 4 stars.
Yeah, but it's like most RPGs, it's like, you know, first star is easy, and then it's like progressively more and more time.
Except the 4th star. The 4th star is stupid easy to do.
Yeah, it's like, wander around and, oh, look, there's a star.
Yeah, you just go on. But you still have to do like the sunken ship level, and you have to do the cloud level, and the
water
level.
That pirate level is hard as hell. Oh my gosh, I gotta find the squid sticking out of the plumbing at the end of it. I hate that level. Those tentacles do some damage. And I always think like all my characters are dead. I'm always like, okay, so Mario, Peach, and Bowser. Well, Peach is dead, not as fast. Alright, use the syrup or whatever it was you need to do. You're dead again, Peach. All right. New characters. Okay, so Gino. All right, we got 3 damage dealers. Oh, wow, and we're all dead, too. This is a really hard squid.
Am I the only one that just traditionally does not like water levels in games?
Oh, it loves to hate.
I don't know. I mean, like, there wasn't very many water levels in the beginning, and at least in Super Mario 3, the third-level water things are kind of interesting to me. I know the water temple in Zelda is, like, infamous at this point now. I think it's just because the memory of it is worse than what it actually is.
It's because of the number of times you have to readjust the stupid water level in order to get to just the right room, and if you miss it by 1, then you have to retrace your steps the entire way in order to readjust the water level to just the right point. It's a time-consuming temple is the problem. Yeah. Now, if you know exactly what you're doing and which level to put it at the right time, then it's not so bad. But it's having to do all of that in the right order, and you know, the first time you're doing it, if you're trying to be a true gamer, well, I'm not going to call you true gamers because I know we've all cheated, but you're usually trying to figure out a Zelda dungeon by yourself the first time around.
I mean, I never really looked at anything. I mean, it's just like, I'll figure it out. It took me 4 hours. It really did. It took me 4 hours of solid playing to do the water temple the first time I did it. But I was also conversing with, like, my grandma at the same time. I mean, I was kind of, because it happened to be when I was playing it, her and my grandpa were here for a visit. They came over. And they're like, oh, no, you can just keep playing. Because I was playing on the living room television. So my mom and her and my dad and us were all visiting. And I'm also trying to get through the water temple. I did it eventually. But yeah, my advice is if you're going to do it, sit down so you can have at least a couple hours. You're like, okay, I can do this couple hours. And that way you can just go at it. Because if you start and you stop and you come back, you're like, what the frick was I just doing?
So last time I played through it, I found that I needed some breaks a couple of times just to, like, reset my brain because I've, like, I had gone to spots, like, I have no idea what I'm missing right now, basically. Stop, you know, I went and did, like, snack or something or whatever. Came back in, you know, 15, 20 minutes, like, okay, that's what I need to do.
See, and then other game I've been playing recently was the just recently released Dragon's Crown for the PS3 and PS Vita. I got it for PS3 because I don't have a Vita.
Yeah, my brother's been playing too.
I barely use one hand portable system. I'm not going to buy another. But this game initially actually got a lot of bad reputation from the fan service it has.
A lot, just kind of, yeah, it's bad. I mean, I've watched the character models.
Once you're actually playing it, you just... stopped noticing it, to be perfectly honest. And they were... They had a quite equality in the over-exaggerated proportions of characters. Because it's not just the female characters that are over-proportionalized, it's the guys, too.
But the guys are... It's a false equivalence, though. The women are basically sexualized. They are, you know, sexual. The men are power fantasies, which are different.
It's your traditional over-exaggerated fantasy characters. It's been that way in, like... a lot of different art stuff.
I just wish it would change because, I mean, as a female player, I'm like, well, I have to play this nearly naked bikini-clad chick, or I have to play the gal whose boobs are practically spilling out of her top, or at least the elf is clothed, but she's, you know, still tiny, demure sort of female character. And all the guys are like, they're aggressive and man, you know, really hyperized man sort of thing. But it's different, you know, they're like, that's the guy you dream of being, not the guy you dream of screwing up, you know, screwing, like, all the female characters. I don't know. I just, like, I mean, I think the aesthetic, you know, the direction they went with the art, I've seen a lot of different things. I'm like, it looks like moving watercolors. It looks like moving paintings. I'm like, I think that's awesome. I think, you know, that's good. I just wish that, you know, it wasn't female characters always being sexualized, male characters always being, like, powerful male characters that, you know, you want to play. I don't want to play those female characters because I'm like, I don't walk around in a little bikini saying, look at me all the time.
Not yet.
Sorry.
How serious of a game are you planning on being, Crystal? This is the sacrifice you have to make.
But the game itself actually is a rather fun. I mean, it definitely harkens back to that side-scrolling beat-em-up that you play with your friends in the arcade.
Yeah, I mean, it does what it does well. I just wish sometimes it's like, can we just think about it a little harder? I mean, I'm not going to say that it's not a good game. I just wish that sometimes we would stop and think about the way that we portray characters and how other people can, you know, interpret it.
Have you seen the pictures that people have drawn of, like, male-type characters in games wearing female-type armor? And they're really, really hilariously awkward-looking.
I mean, that's the whole Hawkeye initiative. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's on Tumblr. Basically, people take covers of or pages from various comic artists that have female characters in them and then put Clint... Hawkeye in the same pose with a similar cop, you know, and it's kind of, you really see the gender discrepancy then.
Also the broken anatomy.
Yes, extremely broken anatomy in a lot of cases.
Oh yeah, who is it?
Liefeld, really.
Liefeld, that's what I was thinking.
But he's not the only one.
Yeah, there's people who just have like their characters like bending around too much,
or like
they have no organs.
Scott Campbell is a very good artist, but all of his females, they have no internal organs. They have like their pelvis bone is maybe kind of there, and like you can see where maybe the bottom of the rib cage is, but everything else is like, I'm like, no woman has a waist that looks like that unless she's wearing a corset and squashing all her organs in, or has like half of her intestines removed. It just doesn't work that way.
That's terrifying. I saw someone took a Layfield drawing of Captain America just standing in profile, looking off the side of the shield.
With his chest, it's like
you see his chest
three times as thick as his head.
Somebody would have animated that, so the shield is spinning, his pecs are just kind of pulsing in and out, and then he's taking a really, really heavy, deep, long breath, professes in and out, and like, I can't remember if it's like steam shooting out his ears too, but the shield spinning and the chest pulsating was funny enough.
His chest is like at three different angles, even though it's at one angle. You're like,
he has all the abs ever. Every ab is there. Oh, six pack? No. He doesn't buy
12. 12.
Not even the 12 pack like, extends on his sides too, and all up to his ribs. He can't get his ribs. He's strong. Yeah, that's what it is. Yay, sexist comic art.
Yeah, he's an idealized male. Super buff and everything, and you sort of thing.
We can't all.
No, from a guy, I am never going to meet that super idealized male figure. In fact, I'll be lucky if I ever meet the super healthy idealized male figure.
I'm already there.
Of course, my nephew, who weighs maybe a whopping 130 pounds, was recently told by his pediatrist that he's fat.
Oh.
It's like, how is this boy fat? He is a freaking stick. He is almost all muscle. There is no fat on this boy.
How old is he?
Maybe 14?
How tall is he?
Ish.
Ish.
I'm trying to think. Maybe 5 feet?
Oh, 130 is a little heavy for 5 foot tall.
But I mean, he's...
But if he's active...
He's not even 5 feet. I don't know. He's... The point is, he is a stick. There is no... bat there. It's not like he has a... He doesn't even have a freaking stomach that you can see when he's, you know, standing up. And, like...
Of course, yeah, there's the problems with BMI being kind of broken if you're muscular.
Kind of broken, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
not for me. It's probably quite accurate for me. I'm not very muscular. I am soft and handsome.
So, yeah, the pediatrician's like, seriously, he is not that dude. Anybody could tell you that.
But NDK is coming!
Woohoo!
And hooray!
And we have a whole lot of cool guests this year again. I'm going to just go through the list here, people.
Yeah, that's the easiest.
Bryce Papenbrook, Jeremy Lay, Chris Patton is back, which we never thought would happen because he said he wasn't doing the conventions anymore a few years ago. Clarion Harp is back. David Vincent, I think he's a returner. Kara Edwards, Kevin McKeever is back. He is from Robotech.
Robotech guys are usually always there.
Yeah, and he was actually at the Sauna conference, too. Lauren Landa is going to be there. Leigh Clark is back. Lotus Juice, which is a Japanese rapper, is going to be there. Everybody's favorite Patrick Seitz is coming back.
He never leaves.
Yeah, some people claim he just, you know, he hides around the Marriott when he's not doing voice acting or at the convention. Raj Ramaya, which is an Indo-Canadian singer.
Did the vocals for Ask DNA, which was the opening theme on the Cowboy Bebop movie.
Yeah, he's the musical guest for this year, I believe.
Well, one of. There are several musical guests this year.
Steve Yoon is back. I believe he's a another Robotech guy. In fact, he's the vice president of Harmony Gold. Talisin, T-A-L-I-E-S-I-N.
Let me see. Talisin Jaffe.
That's what we're going to go with. He's going to be there. Let's see. Appeared in such films as Mr. Mom, 2010, and Explorers, and television shows such as She's a Sheriff, Amazing Stories, and The Facts of Life. Then Tia Ballard is going to be there, who does Happy the Cat in Fairy Tale.
There's a lot of people who are in Fairy Tale currently that's coming.
Todd Habercorn is going to be back, and Tommy Yu is returned, and he's the Robotech creative director / president of animation. So, still, we have a lot of cool guests again this year, and we'll see who we actually get interviews with. Hopefully, you know, last year we tried to do 4 interviews. We successfully recorded one. The second one that we successfully did the interview with, my recording got corrupted, and the other 2 canceled on us.
Well, they were sick. They flew them out.
Well, Leigh got better after our interview. Like, 3 hours after we were supposed to interview her, she started feeling better. Wendy, they actually had to fly her out. Poor Wendy. And she's not here this year.
Yeah. So at least I think it's hard for us to stop and think about sometimes because we're adjusted to the altitude and all this stuff here. And then when these people come in, sometimes I think they're like, holy cow, oh gosh. And you know, they're already on a crazy schedule and having the altitude and stuff with it doesn't help.
Yeah, and they try to warn people that visit NDK from other states every year. It's like, especially, you know, the attendees. Remember,
drink
a lot of water.
If you drink alcohol, remember, you're going to pass out.
It's like, yeah, that's always my favorite joke about that. It's like, remember, if you enjoy alcohol, you've just become a very cheap date. People from lower altitudes have a lot lower alcohol limits here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, if we go to California, our alcohol tolerance doubles.
Yeah.
Going to New Zealand, you're like, you lay back a 6-pack, you're like, did I drink anything?
That's embarrassing.
That was me, like, the first day there. I was like, had a barbecue at the hostel I was staying at. It's like, okay, yep. Drinking some beers, go back to look. I was like, oh, I drank that whole 6-pack I bought. Oh. Just kind of like, I don't know. Exactly.
I passed the first test. I didn't go blind. I love that.
Well, it was Spates, Old Dark, so.
Oh. It wasn't questionable. Like, Hober is like a flaming Hober.
No, it wasn't Tui.
Yeah, they always have to remind people it's like, you need to stay
eat regularly.
Plenty.
You cannot survive a poke and ramen.
And for the people that can't afford the hotel restaurant, they actually set up a little, you know, like, you know, cheapo buffet thing that has actually pretty decent food.
And there's a lot of stuff within walking distance, as we discovered. I'm still just excited. I want to go back to the original Pancake House. I know this is silly.
And Care Bear doesn't have work that day, so she can actually join us.
See, it all works. We can all go to the Pamukkah House because we just got to go pick up our press badges at 11.
Actually, we'll probably be able to do that Thursday again, remember?
We didn't, no.
Oh, no, that was the regular passes.
And we're not buying regular passes this year because we figured, like, well, we're getting press. So, like, might as well let my badge go to somebody who might not have never been because they actually might sell out of pre-registration this year.
Mm-hmm.
They say they only have about 800 left.
As of this morning.
As of this morning. So, it's going to be crowded con this year.
Yes. Well, it's been crowded the past few years because they always have hit that cap. Well, at least last year, they continually hit the cap. We're all looking forward to it. We hope to, you know, get a lot done. As soon as they get the schedule up, we'll be figuring out what things each of us individually are going to try and get covered.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what panels that they have this year, because considering that it sounds like they've changed some stuff, I'm wondering if they're going to have more things, because I don't know if you were reading the press release, they released the autograph signings have all moved to the Hilton across the street.
Really?
The only ones that aren't are Todd Haberkorn and the Japanese guests who haven't been announced yet. They're going to be still in the hotel. And I don't know if it's because they want to use that room for something else.
They're probably running out of space in them. I mean, we've known for a long time they're running out of space in the Marriott. Yeah. Eventually, they're going to have to either... I know there's no bigger hotel, so eventually they may have to move to the convention center and then try and do like Denver Comic Con did and get a deal with the Hilton across the street for the nightly rates.
Yeah, because the other thing is, too, we know that they've moved the Lolita Boutique from where it was to a different room that they've never actually used before, I think, or had access to, which they are now, which is over by the Starbucks, which apparently has changing rooms and also like these beautiful windows and all this stuff to make it... it'll work better for what it is.
I think it was part of, like, a gift shop or something.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe they got rid of the gift shop over there, and... I mean, that at least frees up a few more rooms, because what they really need is a couple larger panel rooms, especially for the voice actor panels.
Oh.
The popular ones, because you can only get, like, 150, 200 people in there. Yeah. But it'll also be interesting to see this year... because I followed the Indie K Tumblr, they were talking about too. They kind of felt last year they sort of dropped the ball on the way lines worked. Because some people literally were lining up for panels 2, 3, 4 hours in advance before they started. And so by that time, the panel that they wanted to be actually went, people were discouraged from even going because it's like there's sort of like 300 people in the line and maybe only 150 are going to get in or something. So they're going to try to say no lining up until X amount of time beforehand, which I think will help. But I expect...
probably with a few exceptions to that rule.
I expect to be mistaken.
Everything in main events, they'll probably let people line up for.
Yeah.
Main events is fortunately usually big enough where
people line up to get a better seat, typically.
That's the pro of actually working on during the con and doing press stuff.
I mean,
like second row or third row or something usually.
Yeah, but we're working at it. We're stuff, taking pictures, doing our thing to report to other people who can't go or can't. Yeah. You can't see everything.
It is physically impossible to see everything.
This is one thing you learn about going to conventions: is you can't see everything. Don't worry about it. Sit down, go through your list, say these are the two things I have to absolutely see, and then say these are a couple other things that I would really like to see. And everything, you're like, if I don't see it, I'm not going to, you know, feel it's the end of the world.
It's not going to break my heart.
Yeah.
But yeah,
With all these games that I haven't played on Steam. Holy smoke. I have Civ 4 and it'll work, but for some reason I can't play any of the Civ 4 expansions on here.
And I guess we should probably mention the most important thing about NDK. It's September 13th to 15th.
Yeah.
Because we should let people know where it is if they forgot.
The problem is, this podcast is going to be after pre-registration closes. Pre-registration ends today, the Sunday that we're recording. There will be limited numbers of weekend passes and day passes at the convention. If it's like last year, I know Saturday sold out. I don't think Friday or Sunday sold out, but considering that pre-reg might be selling out today, I wouldn't be surprised if the other ones do too. Considering we get people sold from all over.
The tendency is if you want to buy a pass at the con, you've got to be there early.
And stand in the line.
And take some water.
I'm glad they have more fountains. But the only other thing I've done is I've read American Gods by Neil Gaiman. I think this is like the third or fourth time I've read this book, at least. I catch different stuff every time I read it. And it's just, I don't know, I just find it fun because it's like, what is, you know, all the gods in the entire world actually did exist because they are born of people basically believing that they exist, but then as time goes on, you start forgetting some of those gods, or, you know, they're kind of only vaguely remembered by people who study mythology and that sort of stuff. And then there's new gods that come out, like gods of the internet and gods of, you know, shopping centers and that sort of stuff, because, you know, they're things that people sacrifice their time and money and effort towards. We don't necessarily sacrifice, you know, people and blood and everything all the time anymore, but I don't know. I like the concept. I like Neil Gaiman's approach to, like, sort of, like, rural, small-town America that kind of exists here and is sort of, like, mystique that surrounds it. I think he captures it very well. I you know, usually thoroughly enjoy the book, and I enjoyed reading it again. It is also on the top, NPR's top 100 sci-fi fantasy books that you should read. So I suggest if anybody hasn't read it, you should read it.
Okay. Well, I think I'm out of stuff. I think we should call this here today. What do you guys think?
Yep.
All right. Well, you can find us on thegameslave.com, facebook.com/thegameslave, Twitter. We can find us at thegameslave and Google+ thegameslave. I don't change those up a whole lot for a reason. In the meantime, everybody have a great week and game on.
Game on.
Game on.
Game on.